going to go ahead and get things started, even though some people are probably still going to come dribbling in from the coffee break. Welcome, everyone, to this afternoon's session on Artisan Repertoire, New Orleans. Very topical indeed. And we have a slate of three great papers that I've been looking very forward to hearing. First up, we'll be hearing from Bob Maravich, who's a gospel announcer, music historian, and reviewer. And he hosts a radio show, Gospel Melodies, that is on Chicago's WLUW for 8 straight years on Saturday mornings from 10 to 11. Sorry to give your time wrong. That features gospel, spirituals, and jubilee recordings from the beginning of recorded sound up through about the early 1980s. He has also interviewed a number of gospel legends on that program and writes about gospel music, both current and classic, on the Black Gospel blog, www.theblackgospelblog.com, and has contributed entries to the Encyclopedia of American Gospel Music, to Vibe Magazine, and to the soon-to-be-published Encyclopedia of African-American Music. He's the former second vice president of the Chicago Area Gospel Announcers Guild. I didn't know there was one. But he is indeed the second vice president on the board of directors of the Chicago Gospel Music Heritage Museum and an elector for the Gospel Music Association's Gospel Music Hall of Fame. And as you might have surmised, he will be speaking this afternoon about gospel music. Specifically about Mahalia Jackson, a Louisiana native, in a presentation entitled Bon Ton and Good News, the Influence of New Orleans on the Performance Style of Gospel Singer Mahalia Jackson. Bob Maravich.
Thank you. There is a Gospel Announcers Guild. There's only 4 of us, so second vice president. 73 years ago today, a 25-year-old gospel singer and her accompanist entered an imposing building with a diabolical address, Chicago's Furniture Mart at 666 Lakeshore Drive, and walked into a recording studio. With the famous A&R man, J. Mayo Inc. Williams, standing by, Mahalia Jackson and Estelle Allen waxed 4 sides for Decca Records. Now, this was the first time that Mahalia Jackson, to be named the world's greatest gospel singer, ever made a commercial recording. Of the 4 cuts that she and Allen made that day, 2 were hymns sung with suitable gravitas, but the other 2 were jazzed. They were representative of the swinging spirituals that were then roiling the musical mores of the city's African-American Protestant churches. To Mahalia, however, there was no conflict between swinging and spiritual. Years later, she told producer Jules Schwerin, "When I came up north and a lot of people question me about the way I sing these religious songs, I tell them that's the way I heard them being rendered this way from my childhood. That's why many people think it sounds like jazz, but it is the way I heard it played as a little bitty girl." Mahalia Jackson was a little bitty girl in New Orleans, a town known for its musical swing. Now, in truth, Mahalia was the product of many influences, but she often spoke of how the music of her Mary City, as she called it, left an indelible imprint on her performance style long after she moved to Chicago. When she was at her most comfortable and freest, Mahalia sounded like a trumpet. And those who knew her confirmed that no matter how sedity or high class she became in her later years, she was always a New Orleans girl, whether it was the gumbo she prepared in her kitchen, the down-home flavor of her language, or the way she subconsciously fused the bon temps or good times with the bonne nouvelle or the good news of gospel. So as we shall hear this afternoon, some of Mahalia's earliest recordings contain that elixir of hymnody and high-spirited rhythm that was not only New Orleans-derived, but altered the dominant sound of the African-American church and of American popular music at the mid-century. What I'll do is set the stage by sharing with you some details about Mahalia's upbringing in New Orleans, the sound she absorbed while living in the 14th Ward, then her migration to Chicago during the Great Northern Drive, and her confrontation with the conservative Northern urban church community there. I'll identify and describe what I believe to be are the 5 components of the New Orleans sound that we hear in Mahalia's early commercial records, as well as a couple of live recordings, and illustrate them by playing some examples. I will conclude, though, by providing a word of caution about the process of teasing out the indigenous influences from an artist's performance style. Mahalia Jackson, her name was originally Mahalia Jackson, was eventually considered royalty, but was born in humble circumstances. Many Mahalia birth dates are reported, but the definitive birth date that I have come across most often is New Orleans, October 11, 1911. Mahalia's parents, Charity Clark and Johnny Jackson, never married, never lived together, so she was raised by her mother and aunts in a section of New Orleans called Greenville, around Magazine and Walnut Streets, near Audubon Park. The picture in the left-hand corner is what that area looked like, and then just yesterday I went and took some pictures. The area is regentrifying, but at least it gives you some sense of the area where Mahalia Jackson grew up. The Greenville area during her time was financially, but by no means culturally, impoverished. She soaked up a carnival of sights and sounds that would inform her performance style. First and foremost, though, she was influenced by the music and singing of the city's African-American Protestant or Baptist church. This included what she referred to as the singing tone, the cries, moans, and chants of the Baptist preacher, and the communal energy of congregational singing. Now, let me add that while it's outside the scope of this presentation, the African-American preacher's singing tone and cadence have a much greater impact on gospel music even today than is reported. The Plymouth Rock Baptist Church Children's Choir was where the four-year-old Mahalia made her first public singing debut. Her slight frame belied the sonorous voice within her as she sang songs such as Jesus Loves Me and Hand Me Down My Silver Trumpet Gabriel. In fact, Mahalia's version of Hand Me Down My Silver Trumpet Gabriel was so popular that it was her signature song while she was a child. Oddly, she never recorded the song as an adult, but my sense is she probably had grown tired of it by the time she was an adult. Mahalia was 6 years old when her mother passed away. Her mother is Charity, right in the middle. She and her half-brother Peter were collected by their aunt Mahala, nicknamed Duke, Duke's up on the top, and went off to be raised by her. The address is given as 144 General Scott, and I have found no General Scott streets in New Orleans, so I'm assuming that may be a misnomer. Anyway, this included switching church membership. She went from Pilgrim Rock to the Mount Moriah Missionary Baptist Church, then located on Meodon Street, where she was a member of the choir. But she credited the foot-tapping and hand-clapping of Mount Moriah's congregational singing as the ingredient that gave her music its pulse, or as she called it, the bounce. And we'll hear about the bounce time and again this afternoon. Also informing her performance style was the raw, unpolished, and spirit-influenced sound of a sanctified church, I believe a holiness church, that was a few doors down from her Aunt Duke's. In her 1966 autobiography, Moving On Up, Mahalia explained how she would listen to the saints as they worshiped with unfettered musical fervor in that holiness church to bring the Holy Ghost into the house. Now, Mahalia did not join the sanctified church. She remained Baptist until her death in January 1972. But it was not unusual for African-American Protestants to worship at the old landmark on Sunday morning, pay their tithes, and participate in the worship services at Pentecostal churches Sunday evening or during the week. And Aunt Mahalia did that. She was also exposed to, fascinated by, and participated in the second line of New Orleans' marching or funeral bands. As we know, after mourners buried their dead and gathered behind a marching band for the second line walk home, the front line marching band literally changed its tune from sorrowful to joyful. Jackson remembered, they would all get right into the jubilant feeling of this jazz music, she said. So that's how a lot of our songs that I sing today has that type of beat, because it's my inheritance, things that I've always been doing, born and raised, up and seen, that went on in New Orleans. Now today, our impression of Mahalia is often of the saved adult gospel artist who refused to sing secular. But as a young girl growing up in New Orleans, Mahalia accompanied her cousin Fred, Aunt Duke's son, to the local dance halls where jazz bands played. She remembered seeing King Oliver and his band performing on the back of a flatbed truck coming down Magazine Street to advertise an upcoming dance. She regaled her playmates with renditions of St. Louis Blues and My Blue Heaven, and incorporated the worried scoops and plaintive moans of female vaudeville blues vocalists such as Bessie Smith and Mamie Smith. And as a teenager, Mahalia was especially fond of Bessie's 1925 recording of Careless Love. By 1927, 16-year-old Mahalia had grown weary of Aunt Duke's zero-tolerance child-rearing and joined the hundreds of thousands of Southern migrants who drove, were transported on what they called pass riders, or boarded the Illinois Central passenger train to Chicago. She moved in with her aunts Hannah and Alice at 3250 South Prairie Avenue in Chicago, in its Southside Bronzeville community, a couple of short blocks from Pilgrim Baptist Church down in the bottom, and a couple more from the fabled Stroll Entertainment area along State Street, where the Grand Theater, the Vendome's Theater, all was located. Central Station was where she would have come in as a migrant, and the Plantation Cafe was part of that Stroll area, all within walking distance. About a month after she arrived, early December, the Clark sisters, her aunts, took their homesick 16-year-old niece to visit Greater Salem Baptist Church, which was then located at 3300 South LaSalle Street, where Reverend C.C. Harper was pastor. Like all of Chicago's Protestant churches during the 1920s and early 30s down on the South Side, Greater Salem discouraged enthusiastic worship and singing. Theirs was a theology of restraint, order, and racial assimilation. As historian Johari Jabir put it, this was a Protestant project by cultivating the attributes of refined living. Urbane college-educated pastors and politicians could demonstrate to the outside world that African Americans were every bit as capable as whites of creating, performing, and enjoying the fine arts. And given the plethora of churches on Chicago's South Side, each church's fortune depended on the quality of its worship service, especially its music. So the senior choir was directed by a classically trained musician. Locally popular soloists were often compensated to sing with the group. And Sunday services were epic. Instead of congregational singing and long meter hymnody that Mahalia would have had at Mount Moriah, senior choirs rendered Handel, Bach, Beethoven, and composers such as Coleridge Taylor, who worked within the Western European tradition. Instead of the fiery rhetoric and singing tone of folk preachers that Mahalia and her migrants enjoyed back home, the leaders of the Northern Protestant churches delivered intellectual oratory. Preaching and singing without active member participation was, as one Southern migrant churchgoer exclaimed, was kind of proud-like. So needless to say, Mahalia's first encounter that December 1927 with the restrained worship of Greater Salem Baptist Church was a sonic clash of cultures. She stood up and gave her testimony at the 11 a.m. service. She burst forth with her brassy swing in New Orleans favorite, "Hand me down my silver trumpet, Gabriel." This in a church that was more used to lift up your heads. Her performance was met with a polite but palpable silence from the congregation. Of course, Reverend Harper, who was stunned, Mahalia at Greater Salem was like barbecue at a tea party. But he and the choir director took note of the young woman with the big voice and encouraged her to join the Greater Salem Baptist Church Choir, which she did. It was here at Greater Salem where she met Prince Wilbur and Robert Johnson. Together with Louise Lemon, the brothers had formed a singing group called the Johnson Singers. The Johnson Singers have been cited by historians as being the first gospel group, although one contemporary witness recalls their style to be more like a quartet. Regardless, Mahalia, her trumpet of a voice, a postcard from home, became the group's main attraction, and eventually the Johnson Singers were hired to perform at churches throughout Chicago. Soon Mahalia was invited to perform as a soloist for sanctified churches, funeral services and tent revivals such as Bishop A.A. Child's Evangelical Temple, where her musical outburst to Southernness was not only welcomed but celebrated for its ability to attract souls to Christ, new members to the fold, and offerings to the church coffer. But what exactly from Mahalia's New Orleans experience found its way into her performance style? Before we go any further, let me note that a decade would pass from the time she sang "Hand Me Down My Silver Trumpet, Gabriel" in December 1927 at Greater Salem to her May 1937 Decca session that we referred to at the beginning. Like the New Orleans musicians from jazz who moved north to Chicago, by the time we hear Mahalia Jackson on a commercial recording, peeling away which was indigenous to her New Orleans experience from what she picked up in Chicago and elsewhere, can be an exercise in subjectivity. We'll turn to this question at the end, but for now, let me give you my thinking as to what the New Orleans pieces are that we hear in Mahalia's Decca titles and a recording she made for Bess and Ike Berman's New York-based Apollo label between 1946 and 1954. I also have a couple of unissued live recordings to share as well. Taking as a given Mahalia's Baptist and Sanctified Church influences, as well as the sound of the female vaudeville blues singers that she carried all through her career, there are essentially five aspects of the New Orleans influence on her performance style, and they come primarily from the jazz bands and the marching or funeral bands. Number one, rhythmic pulse or bounce, her emphasis of each beat as opposed to the first or third or the second or fourth beats, has a bit of a stomp that we hear in jazz and the marching of the funeral bands. Thematic variation and improvisation where gospel singers during Mahalia's rise to popularity stood, as they would say, flat-footed and sang with vocal melisma or worried notes to their singing, Mahalia Jackson improvised a brief melodic line like a jazz trumpeter solo. Undoubtedly, this practice came from her experience hearing jazz and marching bands in New Orleans, but also the jazz bands that moved to Chicago, because she did go to the theaters when she moved there. Attack, like a trumpeter launching into a hot solo, Mahalia accentuated the first note of a melodic line with a blast of sound, often using a toss-away word such as well or oh or lord as the point of effort, emphasis. Physicality, when Columbia Records scrubbed Mahalia's persona for national or a white appeal, and she let them do so, she became a portrait of simple piety, gleaming eyes lifted in beatific praise, lips pursed into a satisfied smile, and hands clasped upwards. Yet those who remember Mahalia's early performances in Chicago say that that was anything but who she was. For example, she was known to lift her dress ever so slightly above her ankles and launch into a lively two-stepping holy dance. Mahalia was also reported to run the length of the performing area and even fall dramatically on bended knees as the spirit and audience moved her. Her physical performance, one of joyous freedom and inner power, came straight from the sanctified church, but also from the New Orleans second line, where the revelry was a release of the tension built up during the burial of the dearly beloved. Yet in Chicago, Mahalia was referred to pejoratively by her conservative church critics as old snake hips for her holy dancing. Listening to her records, we cannot see her perform, but we can hear her brusque hand claps for emphasis and the physicality of her movements and her breathless vocals. And finally, her Southern church vernacular. When she was in the spirit or got happy, Mahalia would pepper her songs with colorful vernacular interjections such as yeah, 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 or Lord have mercy, and other exclamations that she had in common with African-American Southern migrants. Now, this made Mahalia sound like one of the people, not just another Southern migrant trying to make it up north, not above her raising. Incidentally, Chicago's African-American disc jockeys would do something similar, introducing hip slang language onto the air that endeared them to the common man. So now let's hear some examples of these five principles as Mahalia introduced them to a wider public on her early commercial recordings, starting with her first, that May 21st, 1937 session for Decca, 73 years ago. Just to whet our appetite, though, for how Mahalia jazzed the spirituals, let's just start with a snippet of Louis Armstrong. It would be the first track. The record you've heard of Homer Roadheaver or the Chautauqua Preachers Quartet, and that would have been the predominant sound of the religious song in Chicago. Now here's God's Gonna Separate the Wheat from the Tares, a song Mahalia is reported to have learned while attending Baptist Church in New Orleans. Listen to how she puts the jazz bounce in her vocals, and Estelle Allen's jazzy piano riffs help her get into the spirit, and that's track two.
God's gonna separate the wheat from the tares, didn't he say? God's gonna separate the wheat from the tares, didn't he say? Let him go where he will and may, tell that great harvest day. God's gonna separate the wheat from the tares, didn't he say?
Now, for comparison purposes, let's listen to the country blues guitarist Blind Joe Taggart's version of the same song, and then we'll roll back into Mahalia's version. Notice how the two are very similar, but Mahalia has more of that bounce in her version. Tracks three and four.
I'd gonna separate the wheat from the tares, did he say? God's gonna separate the wheat from the tares, did he say? Let him stand as he will of me till that great harvest day. For God gonna separate the wheat from the tares, did he say?
Got him when I was young. One thing, give me understanding. I know I've been truly bum. If you never have me sing no more, just meet me on the other shore. God go separate the wheat from the tare, didn't he say? Oh, God go separate the wheat from the tare.
Now, the second Matrix that day was another jazz-influenced piece, a holiness or sanctified song known as Sing On, You Singers, or sometimes known as Sing On, You Sinners, but strangely titled Oh My Lord on the Decca label. This is track 5.
Worry about your leader. Well, when I get to heaven, I'm going to put on my shoes. I'm going to walk around in heaven. I'm going to tell the good news. I'm going to head outside King Jesus. I'm going to tell him about my trouble. I'll be walking with the Lord, the Lord. Now you must know.
So now, when Mahalia's two Decca records did not sell well, and the company was unable to persuade her to sing the blues, which is kind of why they wanted to record her in the first place. In fact, they could barely persuade Mayo Williams to ask her the question about singing the blues. She was not invited back to 666 Lakeshore Drive, which is still there, as a matter of fact. So now from 1937 until her next session for Apollo in 1945, she makes no recordings at all commercially. She opened a beauty parlor. She continued to sing with the Johnson Singers, got married, worked as a song demonstrator for Thomas A. Dorsey, and continued working the local circuit as what she called a fish and bread gospel singer. And here she is with Thomas A. Dorsey in 1939 as they're going to go off for the National Convention of Gospel Choirs and Choruses. So we don't really hear from Mahalia on record again until 1945. But when we do, the influence of the St. Louis jazz and marching bands is still present. I mentioned earlier about her attack technique using throwaway words. You'll hear her do this on Well Well, on her 1950 recording of a big hit for Brother Joe May, Do You Know Him? And this is track 7. Thanks to Acrobat Records in England, we're fortunate to hear this next recording from Mahalia's visit to Paris in 1952. On Somebody Touched Me, she not only bounces the beat, but tosses off the exclamations of laud that revealed her down-home, just Mahalia persona of the Southern Church vernacular. And this is track 8.
Somebody touched me, one morning, Lord. Somebody touched me, one morning. Somebody touched me. Somebody touched me, soon one morning, Lord. Somebody touched me, soon one morning, Lord. Somebody touched me, soon one morning, Lord. touch, and it must have been the hand of the Lord. Oh, he touched me with his precious love. Somebody touched me with his precious love. Somebody touched me with his precious love. Somebody touched me, it must have been the hand of the Lord.
I have a couple more examples of the jazz bounce that she puts in her music in The Attack. On the first, you'll hear is Power of the Holy Ghost from 1949. She turns the line into a short and almost wordless solo. We'll move from there into her popular version of Reverend Brewster's How I Got Over, where you will hear a confluence of the blues, the jazz, and the sanctified church in her growls. And these would be tracks 9 and 10. Examine how Mahalia improvised on a musical motive like a jazz soloist, let's first hear Roberta Martin's composition of Didn't It Rain, sung by a male Jubilee quartet, the Skylight Singers, masquerading as the Bible Tone Jubileers from 1946, and then a couple of samples of Mahalia's take on the song from a 1953 Apollo session. She would record it again for Columbia, and these would be tracks 11, 12, and 13.
Well, didn't it rain, children? God gonna send the water from Zion. He's gonna rain from heaven up high. It's gonna rain, it's gonna rain.
Well, it's gonna rain,
children. God gonna send the water from Zion. He's gonna rain from heaven up high. It's gonna rain, it's gonna rain.
Now, didn't it rain, children? Talk about rain. Oh, my Lord, did not, did not. Did that, oh, oh my Lord, did that rain? Well, rain for the day, for the night, it's not stopping. Lord, oh God, rain stop dropping. Knock at the window, knock at the door. Cry, brother, Nora, can't you take on more? No, God, no, no, you're full of sin. God got the key, you can't get there by morning. Well, just listen to the rain. Just listen to the rain. Well, oh, oh, in the rain, children, rain, oh, my Lord, did not, did not, did not, oh, oh my Lord, did not rain.
Here are two more examples of how Mahalia introduces the melody and then plays with it. The first is 1952's Said He Would, where she is backed by the Selah Jubilee Singers, who vocal group fans will know as the Larks. The second is Getaway Jordan. Mahalia recorded it in 1949, but in the 1950s it would become a big hit single for the original gospel harmonettes. Again, throughout these tracks, we still hear that New Orleans pulse in her music. And it's tracks 14 and 15.
We call the ocean my Lord. Boy said he would. Said he would calm the raging sea. Said he would. Said he would. Well, he calmed the ocean my Lord. Boy said he would. Said he would calm the raging sea. Said he would. Said he would. Well, he calmed the ocean.
Examples of Mahalia's theme and variations or jazz improvisation skills. The first is Reverend Brewster's These Are They. She liked recording songs by Reverend Brewster. He wrote her first hit. Move On Up a Little Higher. He also wrote These Are They from 1950. And the second is in the Upper Room, where we again hear the Selah Jubilee Singers or the Larks Behind Her. But to give you a flavor of how These Are They sounded originally, let's first hear the Brewster Singers with Queen C. Anderson, who would have been a contemporary and a competitor to Mahalia, doing the song, and then we'll hear Mahalia's take. And these would be tracks 16 through 19.
These are they, come on.
begging for his mercy, sweet. In the upper room, with
sounds really good in this room. Here's I want to give you some examples of the physicality in Mahalia's singing. Here's another one of those 1952 Paris recordings where she sings Thomas Dorsey's Highway to Heaven. You can hear the hand claps and her breathless delivery in this piece, in this track 20.
Well, it's a highway to heaven. It's a highway to heaven. I'm walking up the King's Highway. Walking up the King's Highway. Walking up the King's Highway. Singing up the King's Highway. Praying up the King's Highway. Shouting up the King's Highway. Pointing up the King's Highway. Shouting up the King's Highway. Singing up the King's Highway. Ha, 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 ha. Walking up the King's Highway. Up to heaven, I can walk up there. What to do it all? It's a highway up to heaven. I'm walking up the King Highway.
Here's one final track for the afternoon, where Mahalia demonstrates her physicality through song, through strong hand claps, and also peppers in some of the Southern church vernacular, such as Lord of Mercy. This comes from an unreleased track from her 1951 performance at the Music Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is now available for the first time on Anthony Heilbutt's compilation How Sweet It Was on Spirit Feel. To my thinking, this might be the closest we get to hearing Mahalia in the raw as church audiences would have experienced her during the 1930s and 1940s. Track 21.
Stop, floating at the window, sound floating at the door. Turn from the north.
Jackson had not herself attributed her lively singing style to her Mary City of New Orleans, this presentation might be just a study in conjecture. By the time Mahalia's Move On Up a Little Higher catapulted her to stardom in 1947, the Empress of Gospel had been a part of the Chicago church and gospel music community for two decades. During that time, she was exposed to many influences, from tent revivals to Baptist, African Methodist Episcopal churches, Pentecostal holiness and spiritual churches. She directed a gospel choir of her own, ironically at Chicago's Mount Moriah Baptist Church. She worked extensively with the Johnson Singers, and through Prince Johnson may well have known and been influenced by another locally popular gospel singer, Mrs. Hattie Parker, who led the Pace Jubilee Singers with her uncanny vocal resemblance to Haley's own Bessie Smith. So how do we know whether the bounce came from Mount Moriah in New Orleans or Mount Moriah in Chicago? Did it come some from the Sanctified Church near Aunt Duke's, or the jazzy sounds of Elder Lucy Smith's All Nations Pentecostal in Chicago, where Mahalia soloed? Maybe it was from all of these. So how can we ever hope to know what the pure New Orleans sound of Mahalia was, or at least purer than we have at the moment? There is a ray of hope. In Just Mahalia Baby, a biography of the singer written by New Orleans' Lorraine Goreau, Mahalia talked about how in the early 1930s, she and her first manager, funeral home owner Robert Miller, went to Chicago's downtown Jackson Boulevard, probably Lyon and Healy Studios, to make vanity recordings that they could sell after her community appearances. Anthony Heilbutt reports that Mahalia pressed such vanity recordings as early as 1933, so just a few years after she got to Chicago, one title being You Better Run to the City of Refuge. Goreau's book has Mahalia hearing the song coming from a State Street record store. So, should these recordings be discovered, or some other oral documentation be found, they may more clearly demonstrate the direct impact that New Orleans had on her performance style. Regardless, Mahalia Jackson most certainly influenced a generation of gospel singers who not only changed the dominant style of African-American church music, but had no small influence on the trajectory of American popular music at mid-century. Think about it. Bounce, attack, improvisation, physicality, and colorful interjections. We could be talking about rock and roll. So if Mahalia Jackson put the bon temps into the bon nouvelle, maybe the bon nouvelle eventually returned the favor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Which she was not. Probably she took the arrangement, and they credited her with the arrangement.
But
They probably meant it to be Mahalia Jackson, but none of the four were original songs written by her, just her arrangements, and they may have given her credit for the arrangements. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Decca, by the way, was really the only one recording gospel in the mid-30s period. And so if it weren't for Decca, we probably would have... Oh, in the 30s. It was, yes. Estelle Allen was the only one that we heard beginning. Everything else was Mildred Falls. She was. She deserves more credit than she gets for giving Mahalia the bounce. No, I believe she was from Chicago.
Hey, Bill?
Well, it was interesting. You know, Rosetta came straight from the Sanctified Church, and so I would think that Rosetta is 100% Sanctified and 0% Baptist. However, the two had a friendship, and so I'm sure they borrowed from each other. But Rosetta had that history of being a street singer, a street corner evangelist, and so she put a lot more of that into her style. She took a lot more chances than I think Mahalia took. Again, we don't know what she really sounded like until the late 30s when she was recorded for Decca, but my sense is that if there was a spectrum and here was the extreme, Sister Rosetta was here taking chances where Mahalia would have been right about here.
Other questions? Well, thank you. I have to say, as somebody who teaches a history of rock and roll and regularly covers gospel, Mahalia is the one who is a big hit. Though, I have to say, I have a film clip of Sister Rosetta Tharpe playing her electric guitar, wearing the little church lady flower dress and a little hat, and the students love that, too.